All right, we're ready to go. All right, PJ's giving me the thumbs up, which means it's go time. All right, a little bit after 9:30. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Commissioner Richardson, Commissioner Samuelin, Commissioner Fernandez. Nice to see you all. We're here for the Land Use and Sustainability Committee. I'm going to ask our planning director, Tom Mooney, who is going to announce some deferral items.
Okay. Nick, is there anything you need to announce before? Or?
No, I think I gave you all of mine.
Okay, perfect. All right, so the following items are going to be deferred, and I'll read them in order. Item number one, which is under action items and pertains to automatic stay provisions, has been deferred by the sponsor to the May 13th meeting. Item number seven, which pertains to amendments to the city's LDRs regarding scooter rentals, has been deferred by the item sponsor to the July 7th Land Use Committee meeting. Item number 10, which is pertaining to preservation options for single-family homes, has been deferred by the sponsor to the May 13th Land Use Committee meeting. Item number 11, regarding the applicability of the LDRs regarding the co-ownership of single-family homes, has been deferred by the item sponsor to May 13th Land Use Committee. Item number 12, regarding apartment hotel definitions, has been deferred by the sponsor to the May 13th, 2022 meeting. Item number 15, regarding Chapter 46 and heritage trees, has been deferred to the May 13th Land Use Committee meeting by the item sponsor. And lastly, item number 16, regarding a proposed amendment to Section 1.03C of the City Charter, has been deferred by the item sponsor to the May 13th, 2022 Land Use Committee meeting. So none of these items will be heard. With that, we're ready to go unless there's any additional announcements or deferrals by the committee members.
Colleagues? Okay. I know I have possibly two requests to take some things out of order. Anything else? Anybody need to have items pulled out of order for time sensitivity? No? Okay. Okay. I was asked to take what item is Lincoln Road? Tom?
That's item number three.
Okay, let's take up item number three first. This is an update, or what is this?
Raquel Williams will introduce it, but what's before you for recommendation are three separate ordinance amendments. This item was referred to both the Land Use Committee and the Planning Board at the February 23rd City Commission meeting, and there's three ordinances that are proposed that are related to the RFP. Raquel Williams is going to provide an introduction, and then I'll give a brief description of the three ordinance amendments.
Okay. Good morning, Raquel.
Good morning, Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. Thank you, Tom, for that pre-introduction. I just wanted to let you know that through the RFP process, we did allow for proposers to contemplate a request for land development regulation amendments, and so that is what has brought us here today. The Commission authorized the referral. The goals of the RFP included the maximization of Class A office space as well as replacement parking so as not to inconvenience residents and visitors to the city. And so these amendments would speak to that and address the concerns related to making sure that the goals of the RFP are maximized. So over to Tom to go through each one, and then we can ask or answer any questions as needed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief. There are three separate ordinance amendments. Two have been requested by the responder TPC, and one has been requested by the responder Integra. The first pertains to a proposed amendment to the comprehensive plan for properties that have a future land use designation of PF, public facility, which the GU properties do, in order to allow residential uses. Right now, only affordable housing is permitted as a residential use. The second amendment would be to Chapter 130 regarding parking requirements, and specifically it would amend parking district number 2, which the GU lots fall into, and it would create a provision for public parking spaces to be considered required parking. And the reason for that is so that they would not be subject to the FAR penalty. They would be an FAR exception, and it would give us flexibility to provide more public parking. The last amendment is a proposal to increase the maximum allowable height on GU properties that fall within these boundaries, south of 17th Street, north of Lincoln Lane, between Lenox Avenue and Washington Avenue, specific to GU properties that are part of a development agreement, in order to allow for a maximum building height of 100 feet. Currently, the properties that are subject to this RFP have a maximum building height limitation because of the surrounding zoning districts of between 75 feet and 80 feet. The administration is supportive of all three ordinance amendments, and we have noticed these for the April 26th Planning Board meeting. We will obviously bring your recommendation to the Planning Board, and we anticipate bringing these to the City Commission for first reading on May 4th so that they may travel in the same path as the remainder of the development agreements for these RFPs.
Colleagues, so yeah, we have three. So basically, there are three amendments that are seeking our comment and approval, which would go to the full commission. The second to me is a no-brainer with respect to parking. The third for me, I don't have an issue with, subject to all my colleagues. Tom, on the 100 feet that they're requesting, the neighboring buildings. I know the clock tower one. What do we call that these days? That's a
420.
Is that 420? No. Yeah.
409.
Because that was
107.
That's 130 feet, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. That's 130, and then because all the other buildings there are about the same height.
1111 parking garage is 124 feet, okay. 11 inches. Yeah. And then the SunTrust is just slightly below that. Then you've got the 1680 Michigan.
1680, that's the one.
So there are some taller buildings within the area.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't have a problem with the third. Talk a little bit more about the First Amendment with respect to residential. Workforce housing is the only thing currently allowed?
Under the PF zoning, under the PF future land use designation, yes. And so for GU properties, any use can be approved by the City Commission for a GU property, but it has to be consistent with the requirements of our comprehensive plan. So that's why we are proposing to amend the PF future land use designation so that all types of residential housing would be permitted.
Okay, I'll reserve comment. I don't want to dominate the conversation, but that's one I want to explore. The second and third, I already know how I feel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Tom, thank you for that description. I'm favorably inclined on number two, parking. Have a couple questions about the others. First, in terms of the height increase, Tom or Raquel, could you sort of clarify the language in the procurement that said, okay, here are the parameters, but you potentially can change the parameters. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was not that you could change the parameters. You could request for the city to consider an amendment to the LDRs. And so the administration finds that the request is appropriate and would help us to further the goals that we set before the City Commission and that the City Commission authorized. So we think that the RFP left it open for the development community to evaluate the existing parameters and also make recommendations that might be best suited to further the goals of the city.
And so my follow-up to that is, so there was some proposal on the table at a certain set of rules. Now, you said it, thank you for the clarification, they could ask, but if the rules get changed, is there a corresponding increase in the proposal in terms of the financial benefits?
Certainly. The more Class A office that is available, the more return there will be for not only the developer but also for the city. So we would see financial gains based on the programming of the site. Also, some of the requests as it pertains to the height would potentially allow for more marketable Class A office space, whereas more of the floors could have higher heights so that tenants, especially the top tier tenants that we're seeking to have, would find those spaces to be more attractive.
That helps. And Tom, we've had some discussion in the past. I don't know if it technically applies here or might just be a best practice about renderings and images. What does this look like? Again, I'm not sure if that's legislation on the book or just a best practice. Do we have pictures of what it would look like at this height, what it looks like at 100 feet?
My understanding is that renderings were provided as part of the RFP process. How this would look with the new proposal, I'm sure that the responder could provide those if the commission requested at first reading. All three of these require two readings before the commission. So if it's your request that the responder provide rendering showing what it would look like, I'm sure they would accommodate that.
Yeah, so colleagues, I have hesitation on number three, two things on my mind. One, as the space, the opportunity, the rules change, I want to see correspondingly the economics, and number two, I want to see the images. Let's talk about number one, residential. Would that mean it's possible to have all residential, no office, or would it be a mix? Could you talk about that, Tom?
Could I address that first? So one of the baseline requirements of the RFP is that 50% of the available FAR be dedicated for Class A office.
Okay.
So the project could not be fully residential. Also, it has to provide for parking for the programming that's proposed and the replacement parking for the public spaces that are currently there. So this could not turn into a fully residential project.
So just to build on that, and I appreciate that answer, it had to be minimum 50 office anyway, and then it could have been 50, for example, the affordable housing. What else could have gone in the other 50?
So there was a retail liner component, so the ground floor needs to be activated with retail, and the parking requirement was included in the RFP as well as the Class A office. So those were the three. We did not preclude proposers from proposing residential, and we did note that in our recommendation on February 23rd, and the City Commission did authorize us to move forward with this developer with the inclusion of housing.
But and just to confirm, and I think you are clear as David, even if we approve this, we're still getting at least 50% office.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I look forward to my colleagues' comments on those and anything from the public. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. On the third one, the height, which one of the projects are we talking about? Is that the one closest to 1111?
Correct. And they have, I believe, two properties. They have the lot that fronts Lenox and 17th Street on the west side of Lenox, and then the lot that is to the east of Lenox on the north side of Lincoln Lane. Correct, Raquel?
Right. Those are lots P25 and P26, and the proposer is the Integra Starwood team.
Okay. And so the height of the 1111 is, what did you say, 120-something?
124, 11 inches.
Okay. And what about on the other side to the east, that lot? What's over there in terms of building? Are there any buildings? I'm trying to remember. I could pull it up, I guess, on the map.
The Lincoln is about 75 feet, and then 1680, which would be to the north of this, 1680 Michigan, I believe, is just above that. They might be close to 80 feet. So there are buildings within that area that are about that height.
And in the RFP that went out, did we, this provision that said that I guess offerors could request changes, that was in the RFP, so all the bidders saw that language?
That's correct.
And if height is, if we do a height increase, are there any benefits to the city in terms of financial benefits in that? Do we share in any revenue or how's...
We're currently negotiating the financial terms of the deal, and we're coming back to the Finance Committee with an update on that in terms of the term sheet. But this would certainly allow the project to be more viable and more beneficial in terms of the financial aspect and what the city could gain from the project.
So does that mean that if they have more space to rent, the city would have a greater financial interest?
I would say so, yes, but I also want to circle back to the concept of allowing for more of the floors to have higher heights, and that would assist the developer and the city in ensuring that we have the occupancy that we would like to see from the types of tenants that we'd like to see.
You mean a true type A, class A?
Yes, I think we could secure a higher level of anchor tenants for floors that have higher heights.
And if we do a height increase, can we make that a requirement? That are they looking for a height increase to increase the height of the ceilings or to add another floor?
So it could be a combination of the two. They're still looking at how this could impact the project and how they might be able to utilize that height, but we have been in discussions about offering more floors of office as well as higher heights for the floors.
Okay. And on the first one, you said this was GU, so will this property remain GU? Because we're leasing it, right, as opposed to selling?
Correct.
It still says it remains GU.
Correct. It would only change if the city sold the land and then it became private property. Then it would have to be rezoned to the corresponding zoning district.
Okay. So, and the second one, I don't have an issue with that. When can we find out how more about the third one on the height? Is that going to be something we would find out? You're in negotiations now?
Correct, yes.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt you, but...
No, so I'm inclined to... I'm okay with the first two. The third one, I'm okay with continuing the conversation. I'd just like to find out... I don't want to give more height and then find out it's going to be not used in a way that would be most beneficial to the city. So, I think the height on the one on the west, given that there are some taller buildings there, what I don't think we want is a canyon feel, right? The one across to the east, if there are no other buildings that height, I don't know. Is anyone here from the Integra?
I'm not sure if they're here in person or they may be available on Zoom.
But you're saying they would do some renderings?
Correct. So the City Commission would have to view renderings of these projects before they would be approved to go to the voters. A conceptual design would have to be provided. So the administration has been in talks with the developer, and we think that the use of the height would be to the benefit of the city in terms of finances as well as the attractiveness of the property.
So, Chair, I will move all three of them to send them back to the commission. I would move the first two with a favorable recommendation, and the third one I would move back for further discussion so that we can get some more information on the. I would like to see how it's going to benefit the city. If I can see that there's a benefit for the community and the height, the ceiling height, then I'm going to be very, very supportive. But I think we need to get a little bit more information on that.
And it is likely that with the financial terms that we will present to the Finance Committee on April 19th, that we'll have more details on how the height would impact the overall deal. And so I think that's, coming to all three of you at Finance.
Okay. I see Commissioner Fernandez's hand up. And then, Nick, is someone on the line?
We have Carter McDowell with his hand up.
Okay. Commissioner Fernandez, do you want to go first? You want to hear from
just a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. So I see here we're amending the comp plan for government use properties. So when we're amending this to say we're removing affordable or workforce housing, we're replacing it for residential uses, are we then saying that for all government use properties throughout the city, regardless whether it's in the city center area or not, we're taking away that requirement that it only be for affordable workforce housing?
Yes, it would be. This would apply to all PF future land use designations. So all GU properties that have a PF future land use designation, we wouldn't be removing the ability to do affordable housing. What we're doing is basically saying all residential uses would be permitted, not solely affordable.
But right now, we put in essence, in a way, we're prioritizing affordable and workforce housing at the moment because we've limited only to those two types of housing,
correct,
not general residential uses. And so I guess my question would be the unintended consequence when we do this, because we have a lot of government use property throughout the city, and we certainly do want to promote workforce housing, because, as other residential uses are easier to develop on private property. And my question to you, Mr. Planning Director, is the feasibility of redesignating this as a city center GU so that we don't do this across the board for all garment use property throughout the city, but specifically to this area of the city where perhaps it may be more conducive to encourage this Class A office space and the development of this type of use to diversify our economy. Would that be possible?
Yes, the text could be amended so that the residential uses portion, non-affordable, non-workforce, would be specific to the geographic boundaries of this Lincoln Lane North area.
Okay.
We did that for the height. We could certainly modify this text so that the allowance of market residential would be applicable only to these geographic boundaries.
I would like for this body to consider that just because we do want to continue prioritizing, I think, development of workforce housing. I think of development of affordable housing is very challenging in our city, and I don't know really how realistic it is, but workforce, we certainly want to encourage that. And so, you know, allowing this more open-ended residential use for these properties in this part of the city, but keeping it limited to the other type of residential uses for the rest of the city, I think would be good. And now, Mr. Attorney, so it's not lost on me that whatever lease is negotiated will have to go to the voters to a referendum that ultimately it will be the community to decide what happens. What happens then with these amendments that we are adopting? Do those stay in place? Let's say the voters say they don't want this. What happens then with these LDR amendments and comp amendments that we are considering?
Well, that would depend on when the commission schedules adoption, but also the commission could always go back and repeal these amendments.
Okay. All right. That answers my questions for now. Thank you.
Why don't we let in Mr. McDowell? PJ?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry I'm not there in person, but I wanted to respond very quickly to Commissioner Richardson's questions.
Mr. McDowell, just for the record, you're representing the developer?
Yeah. My address is 1450 Brickell, and I represent the Integra Starwood team.
Thank you.
On lots P25 and P26. The requested height will allow us to provide better floor-to-ceiling heights for the office floors, and it will potentially allow for an increase or an additional floor of office on P26. We've presented some sections to the city as part of our discussions. We're happy to provide additional information as this comes through the approval process. I would also note that the additional height will apply on P26, which is the site that parallels Lincoln Road, right on Lincoln Lane, behind the Apple Store, if you will. There are taller buildings between that site and 17th Street, and the height limit will actually be limited. It won't be 100 feet on the other site because it abuts a lower height along Alton Road. So there will be additional height. It will allow us to improve the quality of the floor heights for the office, the three levels of office on that property. But the full height wouldn't be allowed there because of the adjoining zoning. It would only really be fully allowed on P26, which is further away from 17th Street and paralleling Lincoln Road. And I believe, by the way, that the zoning would also permit this height for hotel products along Lincoln Road. There was a specific amendment that allowed that. So we're happy to provide additional information and answer any questions and look forward to talking with you.
Let me ask a couple of questions. So and thank you for being here to answer questions. Did I hear you say that the westernmost lot, you would not have a height increase there, or did I misunderstand you?
Oh, I don't. Did he hang up? Is he still on?
I was remuted. I'm here. The existing height limitation on P25 is 75 feet because it adjoins CD2 along Alton Road. So there would be about a 10-foot height increase, all of which would be used to improve the floor-to-ceiling heights in the office floors and a little bit in the retail on the ground. It actually would not end up making the building bigger. It simply allows us a much better quality for our tenants, and we, like you, we are looking for the best quality tenants we can attract.
Okay, so I apologize, I don't have all these parking lot numbers memorized. That's what I'm trying to describe.
It is the westernmost lot that is on the west side of Lenox Avenue, running from 17th Street down to effectively the
yardhouse. Yeah, okay. I and what number was that, 27?
That's P25.
25, okay. So, but I thought when you were speaking, I thought you said that only one of them was going to have a height increase. Or will both of them, the one across the street to the east of P25, what is that number? So
P26.
P26. So your project includes P26 and P25. So are you requesting a height increase on both P25 and P26 or only on P26?
The way the ordinance is drafted, it would apply to the entire strip of public land in that area. So it wouldn't just affect us. It would affect the other projects too. The answer is we would on P26, because it's currently allowed at 85 feet, it would allow the additional height on P26. The difference being that P26 is surrounded entirely by CD3 and doesn't abut CD2. Tom can explain it in more detail if you wish. Because it's GU, it picks up the surrounding zoning. And yes, the height would be increased on P26 too. And there, because the site is larger, there's an opportunity to provide additional office floor space within the envelope. And I know the real reason for the height increase is that the bottom, there's an entire floor and a half actually of height that's taken up by the replacement public parking, so that the zoning envelope it has to include both that replacement parking and the private development. The purpose is to improve the quality, and in the P26 circumstance, we have found we would be able to increase the available office square footage, which is the primary driver of this RFP.
Okay, so just so that I understand this, you're saying that with P26, you could improve the quality of the space that's planned now through height, and in addition, you could probably add another floor so you could do more square footage. With P25, it sounds like you're saying you wouldn't add another floor, but you would enhance the quality of the square footage by adding height to the office space floors. Do I have that right?
That's exactly correct. It will also give us a little additional height in the retail on P25, which is the westernmost site. But I might add, and you'll see it as we go forward, that project is specifically designed with a lower profile along 17th Street, stepping up toward the taller buildings to the south.
And do you have any renderings yet of what that would look like?
I have the renderings from the original RFP. We are working on revised floor plans and sections. I don't have renderings yet. We can certainly work on producing them. It's kind of a tight time frame to do a fully rendered view, but we will certainly provide you with the best quality renderings we can of what the buildings would look like with the additional height.
And is your client willing to, as part of the agreement, stipulate to what you just said, and that is use the additional height to improve the quality of the space and add no more than one floor to P26 and add no more floors to P25, but would use the space to improve the quality of the space? Would your client be willing to agree to that as part of the terms?
Yes, it's factually correct, and yes.
Okay, thank you. So,
is there a public comment?
Yeah, I'll get you. Yeah.
So I'm if the city could make that if Integra is willing to agree to that under those terms, then I still want to look at the renderings, but I would be more favorable to that because I think we want the highest quality Class A office space that we can get.
And we could incorporate that as part of the term sheet that you'll review on the 19th.
What I don't want is a, you know, and I'm not, I'm sure they would never do this, but what I don't want is a bait and switch, right, that we give them the height and then we get two more floors or three more, but we don't get the quality. And I'm sure they would never do that. And we could make that part of the term sheet, you know. So,
colleagues, any comments? Yeah, I think, Mr. McDowell, I would suggest between now and the time we take this to the full commission, you make the rounds with all the commissioners and answer all their questions and do presentations because when this goes to the full commission, you're going to have seven of us going through this before final approval, and it could take a really long time in the meeting and then also, delay the approvals. So if you want to try to get this approved at the next meeting, I suggest you do the legwork prior to the next meeting. Commissioner Samuel?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm prepared to move number two on the parking as recommended by the administration. I'm prepared to move number one on the uses with the amendment Commissioner Fernandez mentioned of limiting to this area. I'm not prepared to do anything today with number three. I need to see the before and after economics. I absolutely need to see the renderings. And this discussion of it, how broadly that applies, I'm not prepared to move that out of the committee today.
I would encourage us to maybe move number one and two unanimously, and number three with no opinion, but just because we're trying to potentially get this on the ballot. If we don't do number three, then this will not get on the ballot. You can't do the project. And if you want to vote no, and we'll go 2-1. Commissioner Richardson has some observations. I told you I don't have a problem with a 100-foot building, given the fact that it's not even the tallest building on the block. And you're going to need the height to do Class A office space. Commissioner Richardson has some very good observations, and I think the proposer needs to come and present to us so that we understand what they're going to be building. Yeah. But I would not bifurcate this because I just think then you just sabotage the entire thing.
No, if Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. So we're unanimous on number two. We're unanimous on number one amended, 2-1 on number three. I appreciate the tight timing. But as was discussed at commission, at least a couple of my colleagues said, you know, that timing is because there's an election, and there's lots of elections. But I think this committee needs to do its work. I think these are critical issues. And so for today, I'm a no.
Yeah, the elections are important because they're held once a year. And so if we don't do it in this November, then they're waiting an entire year. These projects take 3 or 4 years to build. You might completely miss the cycle, which also means this project never happens. So it is not something to be taken lightly. So we'll pass it 2-1. But I'm sorry, Mr. Seraldo.
Thank you. It's always nice to give public comment before the motion, but thank you for hearing us now. So I wanted to say Daniel Seraldo with Miami Design Preservation League. A couple of thoughts. First of all, I think Commissioner Samuelian has a good point about trying to reach consensus. I know, usually I get it right. I think the idea overall of the Class A is a very good idea. And recently I've been working at Bureau a little bit because we're renovating the office. And it's cool being around the people, the tech people and stuff like that. However, I did measure their ceiling heights and it's 11 and a half feet. And I asked some of the tenants there, hey, would another few feet help? And they didn't really understand. But I know that that's a big thing now and we're trying to get the extra 3 feet. So whether that will help, I'm not sure. However, one thing I really want to bring up, because if it has to go to the voters, it's got to look really nice. And so I'm glad there was discussion about the height, because Palm View neighborhood is right across the street. And I remember when that zoning was made, those are all single family homes. And they're pretty vocal, if you don't know yet, those residents. So, you know, I would just urge that you all look into setbacks or other accommodations to ensure compatibility. The other thing is, it sounds like a lot of the height is for parking. I mean, would you all consider maybe reducing the parking requirements? So many garages are empty now all over the city, and it's like, why are we building like more and more parking? But I don't know, maybe that's an unpopular opinion, but if you were able to have a little bit less of the garage podium, you could fit probably all the Class A into the 80 feet, and then I think it'd be easier to, do you have to get to 50% or 60 for this, Raquel?
I'm sorry, for?
With a voter?
With a vote.
Oh, this would be 50%.
Okay, yeah, 50%. So 50 is not that hard to get, plus, but if there's like a lot of
point
division.
Point of order, I'm sorry.
It's 60.
Is it 60 in the RDA?
No,
the city center.
No, if we had included the G5 parking garage, that's then it would be 60%.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
I was going to say it's 50%, and if you include it, 60%. So that's part of the reason it was bifurcated.
Okay. Well, all I'm saying is I think it is a good idea, but if we could just have a little more info on the compatibility, I think it'll help you guys get what you want.
All good points. If Mr. McDowell, are you listening? I assume you are, but I would strongly urge you to do a lot of your legwork prior to the next commission meeting. Ideally, you're going to get a 7-0 vote on all three, because it's going to have to go to the voters, and if you know, you're getting 4-3 votes from the commission, it's just going to make it that much harder for you to get the support from the public. So I would suggest lots of legwork and community outreach prior to the full commission meeting.
I just want to put for the record, Mr. Chair, how important parking is, especially as we consider these different projects throughout the city on public parking lots. I know we aim to be a less car-centric community, but the reality is that we're not there yet, especially in an area like Lincoln Road, where we're trying to uplift the area, and we want people from throughout Miami-Dade County. We want people from throughout South Florida, families coming into Lincoln Road and enjoying the area. And, you know, you can't bike from Coral Gables over here. You know, it's just not, maybe Tom can, but it's just not feasible. If my parents are going to come to dinner with me on Lincoln Road, you know, they're not going to bicycle from Westchester over here. So, you know, elimination of parking, I know, is a great goal, but we're not there yet, and we need parking spaces in these commercial areas.
And our, Daniel, we'll share with you our parking revenue. It obviously took a 90% hit during COVID, but it is way, way back, and there is so much demand for parking, and it's incredible, quite frankly, how much demand there is. I mean, look at this weekend right now with what's going on, and there's a lot of need. So I think you've got another gentleman that wants to speak. Chair.
Hi, thank you. Matthew Goltanoff. I couldn't resist to come up here when the topic of parking came up. And, you know, I'll agree with some of the comments that were made earlier, but one of the things to keep in mind is that office use and then entertainment, retail, dining uses are complementary. So while the office buildings may be full during the day, maybe a large percentage of the workers there may drive, the entertainment patrons who are coming, as Commissioner Richardson said, they're coming on the weekends, they're coming on the evenings. So a lot of cities do have, and perhaps Miami Beach does as well, have a shared, you know, shared use parking ratio there. So while I understand the RFP says that the parking must be replaced, perhaps it doesn't need to be increased substantially or up to 200%, as I believe that the draft ordinance states. So keep that in mind, right? If a lot of the height is to increase the amount of parking that's there right now, then perhaps looking at the shared and the complementary uses of the parking and the times of that, then perhaps we may not need to increase it as much. And one more point is that perhaps one day when the Bay Link or whatever it's called is built, perhaps it may go up Washington Avenue, it may go up towards the convention center. That, of course, would also perhaps reduce the need for an increase in parking. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we have one more speaker online.
Okay.
Sarah De Los Reyes.
Okay. Sarah? Good morning. Sarah, are you here for this item or the live ordinance? My guess is live ordinance. Sarah?
I would have the same guess. Or okay. Please unmute. Sarah, please unmute yourself. Oh, hi.
Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, this is Sarah de los Reyes from Sunset Harbor.
Good morning.
Actually, you need to be more clear in this, that you show the rendering, that you show the map where the area is going to be, because it's hard to follow up reading the ordinance, that the three ordinances that are in file, to follow up where this area is being covered. So at least the map and rendering is very important, especially for the public that is not, you know, do not read all the details that are in the ordinance that is very complex. So I'm just letting you guys know that it would be great in order for us to give you our input a lot easier if we see a picture and we see the area in the map, and that will be, you know, why are you doing that area north or south or whatever? By talking about the lots and all that, it's very confusing for at least for the public, for mine. And I'm pretty savvy on some of the stuff, but not full savvy on all the ordinance. So I'm just letting you guys, giving you that input on this. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we all agree. All of us agree that we want to see renderings in a little bit more detail at the next presentation. So thank you. Mr. Galbert.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I just wanted to talk about a very minor issue, and that's parking. And I actually believe that Tom was on something really good a long time ago, doing away with all parking requirements. It's a little bit different. I think that the private sector can tell you about parking better than anyone. I can tell you we're involved in quite a few garages, and maybe the public garages are picking up income, but there's plenty of spaces available. Now, I don't disagree with Commissioner Fernandez, but I can tell you that every day I'm biking more and more in South Beach and loving it more and more. So I'm definitely a bicyclist, and I'm pretty old. So if I can do it, everybody else can do it. And I think the private sector should define what parking requirements there are. And I think, generally speaking, it's a good way to go about things.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, well, thank you for those comments. And, you know, my colleague, Commissioner Samlin, I don't think has been in a car in, 10 years? It walks everywhere. But this is part of the concept. I mean, part of the genesis of this whole entire project is the concept of live, work, and play. We don't have enough Class A office space in Miami Beach. And so a lot of us who live here and that are still working have to drive across the bay to different parts of Dade County to go work. And I, for one, you know, just using me as an example, when I was looking for office space, I did look at Miami Beach, and there's just not enough good product to meet at least my needs. But it's the same feedback we're getting from the market. And the demand is there. We know that. And if you look at it, I think we had 17 or 18 interested parties propose for this deal. So the concept of live, work, play, you know, either walk to work, or if you're going to drive, you just drive once, and then the rest of the day you're on foot to go run your daily chores, go to work, go to lunch and dinner. So I think we'll take up this parking issue at the full commission meeting, and maybe an adjustment can be made. Mr. McDowell, if you're still listening, maybe your client might want to address some of the concerns that have been raised around parking. Because I'm sure if you didn't have to build the parking, you guys would be happy to do more retail, residential, or office.
I am listening. Look forward to talking with listeners. We will definitely reach out. I will say, at this moment in time, parking is going to be required in order to land the tenants that we would all like to bring to Miami Beach. We do have some plans, some ability within our designs to, if it's appropriate, later reduce the parking, and we are providing alternative parking, even though we're not seeking reductions for it, for bike parking and motorcycle, you know, motor scooter parking and other things within the plans.
Tom, what is our city's position? I don't know if it's by ordinance or not, but that any parking, I think it's just city parking, but any parking garage that we build has to be able to, in the future, be adapted for other uses, right?
Correct. That's the policy that the city adopted a few years ago for city garages, where we want to maximize the flat floor plates for convertibility in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that might be something we ask this developer to consider, that or allow that if parking is deemed excessive in future years, that would allow them to convert a floor to other uses. That's reasonable. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, just to confirm the action by the board, by acclamation, we're going to send the parking portion with no changes and the comp plan with the change to limit the area for the non-affordable workforce housing to the city center boundaries, both of those with the favorable recommendation. And then by a 2-1 vote, we're going to send the height ordinance to the planning board with no recommendation.
You got it right.
And just point of clarification, I want to make sure, because now that I realize that the 60% referendum requirement is not allowed, is not necessary here. Does the city center boundary reach that western part of Lenox Avenue?
We can define these boundaries as we see fit. My thought was that these would only apply to these lots here, so the boundaries would basically be GU properties from Alton Road to roughly Pennsylvania Avenue, so Perfect. That they're only these properties. Down the line, if the commission wanted to consider granting some relief for non-workforce affordable housing in other GU properties, they could do that with a future amendment on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. Do we want to – there's one other location, and that is the garage across the street that we've extended for a year. Do we want to include that location as well?
That would be part of these boundaries.
Okay, good.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
That. We'll conclude that one. Another fine job, Raquel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you here for other items, by the way?
I am not.
Okay. Enjoy your day. Let's take up item number two. This is an amendment to the Alton Road Gateway Development Regulations to accommodate a potential new county community health center at 710 Alton Road. We looked at this at the commission meeting and referred this to the land use meeting. I'm not sure who's going to tee this up for us.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll jump in on this one.
By the way, do we have renderings for this or no?
We don't have renderings yet. We hopefully will by the time that we're ready to put this on a ballot, but we are still embroiled in negotiations. We're still waiting on the outcome of the appraisal that we've ordered. And we are still, you know, working through some details with the neighborhood. So we just wanted to give you an update that we are actively engaged on this on a daily basis, but we're not ready to present to you at this point because we haven't settled on some of the important deal terms. I did want to put on your radar that if we are going to make the August ballot, it would mean that this item would be heard next month in Land Use Committee, Planning Board, and a first reading at Commission, all in May.
Okay, colleagues?
I have, so one of the things I've talked to you all about is the parking lot at the corner of Alton and 8th, which is part of Federation. And I don't know, maybe Mr. Galbert could speak to that. I'm very supportive of this project. I would like to see it go. And you know, if having a surface parking lot on Alton Road is probably not the best use or the most attractive use. And I don't know if Mr. Galbert, is that something you're still looking at, whether or not we could incorporate that into the project?
So thank you for asking, Commissioner. For the record, we have had communication with Federation individuals, principals of that organization. And we are, they did call us back, and we're waiting for them to call us back again. So I don't know the answer to that question. But I do want to acknowledge the effort that all the neighbors are making and the efforts that the city is making together with Eric to come up with a solution that would be the right solution supported by everybody. And much to my surprise, we are making headway, but we're not exactly sure what direction it's all going in. So, and the good thing is that everybody's putting forth a good faith effort to come to the right solution, and then we can have the right images. So I don't know what this will look like or if it's even going to be possible. I want to manage your expectations. I never accept failure, but this one is a tough one. So... and it's unfortunate because it affects the socioeconomic disadvantage of our community. And it's really, really unfortunate for everyone. So we are making a major effort. I just don't know where it all ends up at this time.
So but would it be fair to say that if the terms were acceptable and you're able to move forward, that you're not opposed to trying to incorporate that?
We are trying to incorporate them for sure. But along the same token, I don't know that that will be possible or that the entire project would be possible.
No, I know.
We know it's in the best interest of the community. We're putting forth every effort into it, but we have a lot of interested parties and a lot of other people to satisfy.
Lots of moving parts.
Lots of moving parts. And we do have a neighborhood that believes the city is flush with money and the city should be paying for it. And to a certain extent, I understand them, believe it or not. This is a obligation of the city to provide for the health and wellness of their community. And it's hard to argue with somebody when you're not sure that they're 100% wrong. Although I will tell you this, is that every city that accomplishes great things is because they're open-minded and look to avenues to create greatness without costing lots of money. So that's what we try to explain to the community. And we're working diligently with the community. We believe that we're going to get somewhere. We hope we're going to get somewhere. But this one is a tough one, I think.
Yeah, but the county health, that's a county.
The county has been easy to deal with, yeah. Honestly. Their documents are in good shape. We shared them with the city recently. They're not the issue at all. It's really the city of Miami Beach, and they feel in good faith that they've put money into the health clinic all along. They've supported it. They spend millions of dollars on it. This is for the community of Miami Beach. Miami Beach should step forward and figure out how to make this happen. And that's really where the problem is. It's not a county problem. Commissioner Higgins, while she doesn't return phone calls, she is incredible. Her team and staff are incredible. And I can understand why she's so busy, because she's trying to do good for the community as a whole. But, I don't know where this goes. And I don't want to mismanage your expectations.
Fair enough. Well, I know.
I do believe the corner is extremely important.
No. And I think so. I would say if you're hitting road bumps or blocks, you can call on me. I'm sure you can call on any of us because this is really important for our community. And we don't have, I know a lot of people think that we're just sitting around with piles of cash. We've got about 10 capital projects that are priorities for the city, and we don't have enough capital dollars right now to do everything, and so that's why we're doing one at a time. We got the 72nd Street funded.
That's the most important one, believe it or not. The community hasn't had a major investment in years.
We've got some other things that we want to do, and I don't want to wait 10 years until we get down to where this is on the list, but it's a very high priority, and I love the idea that we could get this done with basically the private sector. So
I think it would be a wonderful idea. I think it has immense merit for our community, but the neighborhood has to understand it and agree to that.
Exactly.
And Commissioner Simulian, did you?
Yeah. Mr. Gabbard, I want to congratulate you on your new hobby of bike riding.
Everybody's invited, I ride.
No, I think that's right. I do it once in a while. You and I may need to be on different parts of the island when that happens, but that's a great anecdote. I want to underline what my colleague said. We are not sitting with piles of cash. Anyone looking at street lighting, the conditions of our streets and sidewalks, our resiliency funding, we absolutely are not sitting on piles of cash. Renderings are really important. I voted against the last item in large part because of that, so I just want to make that clear. And I know when we have a good project that we want to move quickly, but could you talk a little bit about why August is so important? More people vote in November. What is your thinking on that?
Our thinking is that this was not something that we brought forward. This was something that was asked of us to help, okay? We have the facility that 3,000 socioeconomic disadvantaged people who live in our community get all of their services at. 200,000 visits a year go to this facility. The city of Miami Beach has condemned this property. Okay? It is not federally compliant. Okay? These people need a new health clinic. The public came to us and asked us to help in this instance. We responded that we're happy to help, okay? It'll either work or not work. We will have done everything in our power to have done so as good citizens of this community. If it doesn't work, we're very happy moving on. So our goal is to not waste years of our lives because, unfortunately, Commissioner Richardson hit it on the doornail. Projects in Miami Beach take forever and ever and ever, and then they don't realize. So we just want an answer, simple. You know, it's not an issue either way. So that is our goal here. And you're right, renderings tell it all, but you have to know what you're rendering in order to do that. And right now we have so many different opinions and so much different thought, but we are narrowing it down and we're trying to do it in an expeditious way as best as possible. Thank you for your time today.
Commissioner Fernandez? So, I mean, look, directionally, I'm super supportive of this. This deal, unfortunately, is pretty complicated. There's a lot of details to be hammered out, and I'm, you know, willing to work through those things. But this has to go to voters. So
it would have to. Yeah.
You know, what is your sense of the timing? And I think this is urgent because of the subject matter. But, you know, unlike the previous item where there are market forces also operating and the life cycle of, you know, those things. I mean, do you think we can get a deal term approved or put in front of us for approval in time for ballot language to be drafted, to be put in front of voters? Or
I do. I'll tell you why I do, because I see the immense effort being put in by Tom, by Eric, by the city attorney. I do. It's just we need a little bit more effort from the neighborhood. And
Well, because, you know, how can we be helpful? Because ultimately it's got to go through us for approval and vetting and then ultimately right. to voters. And the clock is ticking. So what can we do today, if anything, to help?
That's a great question. We do have a meeting set up with some of the neighbors. Most neighbors have really endorsed it and embraced it. I mean, everybody has. It's just some neighbors are asking for other things in return. And
because if the city doesn't have to put in money, then we can move more quickly. But if we have to put in money, then we have to
I'm sure of that.
Allocate it, approve it, et cetera. So if there's no money going to be asked from the city, then I think we have sufficient time to maybe get a deal structure put in place. If we have to find money, then I don't know that we're going
to
make it.
Yeah, our assumption is to be able to work on something that doesn't require money.
Love that. Yeah.
You know? So yeah, that's our goal and objective.
So
and
the issue is the neighbors. I mean, look.
The issue is that something has to pay for a $20 million correct. New medical facility. It's simple as that. And so it's either density or height, and density and height, that's what it amounts to. So when somebody says, you know, we don't want any more units, you know, and we don't want any more height, you know, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And there's
let me tell you how I'm thinking about it. So this is unlike some other projects where developers coming saying, hey, I want to build a hotel or an office building or apartments. And then, you know, you need variances. Okay. The thing that's really important here is the community health center.
Absolutely.
And the abhorrent conditions that they're currently in. So this is a community-wide decision we're making that benefits not just that neighborhood, but the entire community.
Absolutely.
And in order for that to happen, something's got to give. Part of it is an economic reality to fund the move across the street to build a much nicer facility that services our entire community, particularly the most vulnerable. So this is going to be kind of the classic NIMBY situation where the neighbors don't want something. And a lot of times we as a commission listen and say, okay, we're not going to do it
right. Because
it really does impact just that community. But because this is a community health center for the entire city that we all want to see happen, the neighborhood's going to have to give a little bit, I think, on this one. They may not be happy with the final decision and might be upset with us, but we're actually trying to do something for the entire city here, not just one little neighborhood.
It is the righteous decision. It is the right decision as well. Yeah. Although one of the neighbors in particular may not like it, but it is the right decision.
Yeah,
we have that situation a lot. You know, there's no way that we can sit here and make decisions that please 100% of the people. There's always going to be somebody that's going to want us to go in a different direction, which is why I only won my election with 58%, because there were 42% that wanted the other guy, right?
Right.
So that's the way it works.
It's a story of life.
So, yeah, I don't know that any of us had won 100% in our election. Let me ask a question. I was just sitting and thinking, the building across the street where the new health center would be if this works, and the library, have you thought about whether or not it's possible to put more density there? And so if the issue is the density across the street, is there a way for you to do a mixed-use building there? Because you could do 4 or 5 floors there, and it would fit in, and put some of your density over there, and rather than have it all city. Is that something that would be even something you could think about?
For me, I have no objection to it, but it's not our property. It's the county's property, so it infinitely complicates the transaction.
No, but the property that you own where the new health center would
be. Yeah, but that's being transferred to them. The county's going to own it.
I see. So, exactly. So, yeah. But as part of the deal, though, maybe you could have 2 or 3 floors of office space that would be a condo. I don't know how, you know, I get it's complicated.
It would infinitely complicate it, and as it is, the mixed use is 2 different mixed uses, so we have a door on one side, and they're pretty, defined, believe it or not. The county seems to be really on target. They have a lot of people on it. They want the entrance for the library on Alton Road. They want the entrance for the health center on 6th Street. I mean, I don't see how you could get a third use in there. It's just too small of a site, but... You know, Tom has always come up with these, you know, thoughts and things like that, and he's always been quite creative. But I just don't think it works here, especially with the county owning the property. It's just too complicated. What really needs to happen is we have to come to a compromise with our neighbors that everybody is supportive for what is right for the entire community. That's really what has to happen here, and we are working for that objective.
Well, Tom, I think if you're doing community outreach and you think it's a benefit to have an elected official show up, call me. I'll show up.
Thank you.
What do we need to do today on this item? Anything? There's just discussion?
Yeah, this was just a verbal update to let you know where we are in the process and, you know, let everybody know of the timelines if we're going to make an August ballot.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, so is this concluded here? Or are we going to bring it back in here next month?
No, we'll bring it back next month because we do anticipate that wherever we land, we're going to have LDR amendments that need to be considered by this body.
Right. So next month. So what I'm driving at is what's going to happen between now and, say, the next committee meeting? Because, again, I'm just thinking about the calendar.
We're going to have some meetings, again, with the one neighbor who seems to be objecting to it. Come to a compromise, hopefully, if not possible. We'll bring you back something that we think is fair and appropriate, assuming that we don't have too much demands, and then we'll be able to move this matter forward. If we can't come to a compromise, we can't get the community, this particular neighbor, happy, we will know that we have done our best.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. This is something that the county, I mean, we heard it from Commissioner Higgins. This is one of her pet projects. I mean,
it is.
She really and wants to do it. I know some of us, if not all of us, have been to the current community health center, and I was embarrassed. I took a tour of it with you, and I was, you know, embarrassed, to say the least. So I want this to happen, and if I have to upset some people, I'm willing to do that. That wouldn't be the first time, but we shouldn't.
That's what true leadership is all about.
Well, I mean, yeah. So this is an important project. I mean, we have to do something, and we've got a very willing partner at the county, right?
Right.
Initially, it was trying to get, you know, make sure that they were on board, but she's driving this than anything.
She's incredible.
And
she's incredibly wonderful.
Upgrading a library and a community health center is a huge win for our community.
Right. By the way, I have spoken to every one of my friends, and every one of my friends love the idea of a public library. Since the last time we were here, I have gone by on my bicycle in front of the public library on First Street. There are no derelicts. There are no homeless. There are no bums there. The people who use it are mostly the students from South Point Elementary and their parents. I really cannot believe that anybody would be against a library. And I've also gone to 21st Street because I ride my bike that way. And I've gone there. I don't see any of that there. Now, maybe that does happen in New York because I think the gentleman may have been from New York, but it doesn't happen here in Miami Beach, thank God.
Yeah.
Can we put a bike rack in front of the library?
So? Yeah, I'm sure. Tom insists on that always, so perfect. There's no issue.
So looking to our team here, my expectation, I don't know if I'm speaking for my colleagues, but my expectation will be at our next committee meeting you will bring something forward.
We hope so.
That's my urging, meaning if you hit a road bump with some residents, that does not mean, in my opinion, that you shouldn't bring something to us. We will take that caveat, like there's residents that are upset with this, they're not supportive, but I think we need to make a decision here.
The timing that we're looking at is noticing it for the May 24th Planning Board meeting, May 25th City Commission meeting for first reading. So on May 13th, you're going to get the fully developed ordinance.
Yeah, think about what we're potentially going to be voting on, just to fast forward. We're going to be building a new library and community health center at no cost to Miami Beach taxpayers. That services the entire community, the most vulnerable. Okay. And if we don't do that, it will be because you have a few people who live in condos, waterfront condos along West Avenue, who are going to be upset that it's going to mess up their views. That's ultimately what we're going to be deciding.
Correct.
Because if it's going to be this silent vast majority that won't come to chambers, the people that are serviced by the community health center, okay, citywide, that won't attend the meeting, that won't speak up for themselves, but will have a few condo commanders coming in here saying, don't do it, it's going to block my view. That's ultimately what we're going to be voting on.
Mr. Chair, I agree we should see it as quickly as we're ready. I agree we have to balance the close affected with the people who maybe aren't here in front of us, as we always do. And I appreciate, Mr. Galbraith, you heard the message around renderings. We just got to know what it looks like. I think that's critical, okay? That's what I expect to see when it comes back.
Agree. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. Okay. I see some of our city staff here. I want to try to get you moving. Amy, are you here for number five?
Item six.
Five and six, let's take you and get you on your way. Let's do item five first. Okay, so City
of Miami Beach. Amy's here for six, I believe, right?
Yeah, Amy's here for six.
Oh, six, and, okay. Let's do six then. That's what I thought you were here for, sorry. Yeah, this is an interesting project, and I'm glad Commissioner Samuelin is sponsoring this. I'm very interested in this. And this is regarding the shoreline restoration along the Julia Tuttle.
Yeah, I'll tee it up briefly, Mr. Chair. This came from our Resident Sustainability Committee. We discussed this at land use. I think the administration has done some good work on a project that really needs county and FDOT buy-in to sort of make happen. So, Amy, I'll bounce it over to you. Just tell us where we're at and how we can help.
Sure. Good morning. I'm Amy Knowles, Chief Resilience Officer, and thank you so much for taking this item up. So since this item was last heard, I think we've made considerable progress. The city did an entire analysis of our own seawalls and shorelines to identify the best suited opportunities, and Julia Tuttle Causeway came up right at the top. It is a very prime location due to its length and its shallow region. It has exposed low tide, and it's submerged during high tide. So it's a phenomenal location, and it's an environment suitable for mangrove plantings as well. So overall, we know it would protect the roadway. We know that it would help with the resilience of Biscayne Bay. It would help foster aquatic wildlife, aquatic plants. It could be very important. So even though it's an optimal location, it is a state roadway. We've had multiple meetings with the state FDOT to bring this to their attention. So we met with the actual District 6 Secretary, Stacy Miller, as well as the Environmental Administrator, Craig James, as well as the new state CRO, Dr. Brooks. During these, the overall concept really is welcomed. There are some concerns about them really having to address mitigation issues. However, there is, I would say, overall consensus that this is a good idea. So our next steps are to provide some cost estimates that we have in-house based on work that we've done, providing some conceptual design examples, and overall continuing the conversation. We've also met with the county. This is a priority for the county with the Chief Bay Officer. And today we're actually, we'll be bringing it up at the Biscayne Bay Commission, which is the state legislated authority working on improving Biscayne Bay.
Thank you for that, if I may, Mr. Chair. It sounds like you're doing the right things. It appears the state is on point. The county has certainly got an influence. We have a degree of influence. How can we help? What can this body do today or at a subsequent session that might be helpful to advance the good work you're describing?
Well, I mean, this really takes, you know, leadership from a very high level for this to be a priority for FDOT. We will continue to have the conversation. We think the right staff has been prioritized. But it really needs to come at the state level. So perhaps an urging, perhaps, you know, as we work forward in our state legislative priorities, we highlight this as well.
Colleagues, I look forward to your comments and appreciate the chair's initial support. And hopefully for my other colleagues, I absolutely would be of the mind to, at a minimum, make a motion for an urging. Make a motion to add and maybe even move towards the top of our legislative priorities, though there are many, and I welcome other ideas from the group.
I'm not opposed to doing an urging if we want to send it back to the commission and do an urging for to have it added as part of our legislative priorities. That would be for next year. Is there anything we can do sooner than that? Like, send a letter to FDOT or to the regional secretary?
I think we could do that. I mean, we've brought it to their attention. We've had multiple meetings. We could set a formal letter from, you know, our city manager as well.
I think that, because the session's not going to start meeting until March of next year, so why not, as part of the urging, just send a letter of support to FDOT secretary. And I see the governor named a new secretary, I think, today. So, and then just copy the regional secretary.
Okay.
You want to do that, Commissioner?
I do. I think that letter, using an urging from the commission, is good. And I think the second element is, as you said, a little bit further out, but to add to the legislative priorities. Those are two tangible actions. My door is open to help in any way possible. And I think those are appropriate steps. Unless there's anything else, Amy, or you think we could be doing to help here?
Amy, just a question. You mentioned that Secretary Miller expressed support for this, right?
Well, overall, there's consensus that it's a positive idea to, number one, protect their roadways, and number two, to protect and enhance and restore Biscayne Bay. I think that she was also clear with her challenges that FDOT would then be responsible for any mitigation should they decide to do something different with the roadway in the future. And so they just want to be sure that their property is, I would say, best suited for what they might need in the future.
You mean
so
mangrove removal mitigation?
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
But she was overall supportive.
Maybe this outreach that we do before we do a resolution, the letter that was being proposed, is maybe more thanking her. There's a lot of times I think our state government hears from our local governments, you know, asking for stuff or attacking them for stuff, but not a lot of times do they hear a thank you. And so, you know, since she has been receptive to the idea, it might be just good to thank Secretary Miller for being open to it and followed up with an urging.
I think that's a good suggestion. So the three elements will request the administration do the proper follow-up and thank you. Second, move to the full commission in urging. And third, move to the full commission adding this to the next legislative priorities. That would be my motion, colleagues.
I second that.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
So we'll show the item concluded with those actions.
Correct.
Okay. Item number five. Mr. They had both items 4 and 5.
Okay. Let's do 5. I think it'll be quicker, and then
update on four.
Yeah, and I'll tee up five, and I think both of them actually will be reasonably quick. These are verbal updates. We've had these conversations. I don't think there's any disagreement that pervious and permeable pavement can be a good thing. It has a little higher maintenance cost, but it's good for water quality. The conversation, as I recall, has focused especially on Lincoln Road because that is a live-in project, and there might be some real benefits to parts of Lincoln Road. I believe we've talked about First Street, which is also part of item four. So, Joe, you could get two for one if you start talking a little bit about First Street because that's the only part of number four. And then while it's not in front of us today, I believe Ocean Drive, which is at a much higher elevation and is very, you know, meant to be pedestrians, is another. So the purpose today is to get a brief update. Those are the three areas on my mind. Anything else you want and anything else you need to help?
I'll address mine be a lot quicker, I think, than Joe's. Yes, and certainly we get the message. We're going to look at, since we're now going to be redesigning to some degree Lincoln Road, where there are opportunities to bring in some sort of pervious or permeable pavement. And I'm also glad you brought up, we down the road, we will have opportunities to look at Ocean Drive once we bring an RFQ to you to begin design or exploring moving forward with a permanent Ocean Drive in the near future. So,
thank you.
And good morning, Commissioners and Mr. Chairman. As far as First Street is concerned, yes, we're also looking at the parking lot where the equipment for the pump station is going to go is a very good candidate for permeable pavement. As we're developing our concepts now for First Street itself, we're also going to look at a potential perhaps in some of the parking areas to look at permeable pavement as well. So we are definitely committed to trying to incorporate permeable pavements in the project.
That's great. That's exactly what I was hoping to hear, consistent with the conversations. So I of course, welcome my colleagues' thoughts, but I'm of the mind that we've, you know, taken this at this conversation, the point where we could sort of finish the item. Joe, just to keep you moving, because I love the efficiency that my colleague, Commissioner Areola, our chair, speaks to, just as it relates to item First Street. I know we've been in design. Is there a milestone with the community? If you could just tee that up, I think that's really all we wanted on number four from my vantage point.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And regarding the first milestone that we have with the community is the conceptual design workshop.
Yep.
And that'll be sometime in the latter part of May or first week in June. So we're shooting for that. That's right now per the schedule.
That's great. I look forward to hearing about it. And my schedule allows, I'm going to try and attend. Colleagues, that's all I had on five. And frankly, Joe just hit the headline on four.
Awesome. Okay. And then you guys are here for four? Oh, okay. Okay. That's it. Okay. Good. Okay. All right. Awesome.
Thank you.
Have a great day. For number five, Commissioner Samuel, and I believe that you wanted to conclude item number five.
Correct.
And item number four, we'll move this for further updates to the May meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just going to go down the list here. Commissioner Samuelin, item number eight is yours, an update on the building assessment and policy changes. What is this?
Sure. This is a update that if Anna is with us, we have this has really been a focus since the Surfside tragedy. Been a number of items that have come forward. I know my colleague Commissioner Fernandez has brought a number of them forward. And really, you know, The purpose here today is to get a quick update, just the headlines, please, on where we're at, and most importantly, are there any actions from everything done at the county level, discussions, say, is there anything else we should be doing at this point? Anna.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Right now, the county will be voting on the 13th for the second reading of the changing it to a 30-year recert. So that we should see that coming up very soon. And it seems like a positive action, and it's an agreement that all the building officials had made. So I'm hoping that this gets voted in by the county. At the state level, nothing has moved forward as far as any of the safety initiatives. And so locally, I think we've had a very aggressive initiative that Commissioner Fernandez sponsored that was to get the
annual maintenance.
Yes, thank you, the maintenance logs submitted. And so, and that'll, we're going to start training, and we've been preparing the process to start receiving them, but before we go out and then start training the public and start education. So there'll be about a year and a half, 2 years of educational component, and then we start implementation. So that's kind of where we are. I don't think there's anything else happening, and I think we're at a good point. We've taken aggressive action at looking at our thing. I've been working still with the county to make sure that we can host the unsafe panel, mm-hmm. and that's something that we're still in the process. We're going to have to do an agreement, city-county agreement, and that's what we've found out with our investigation into this, is that there's some work we need to do in order to be able to host it. We thought we would have been hosting them by now, but we have to do a city-county agreement in order to get the hosting here. The county had this came to their attention when I kept bringing it up and trying to get to how to do it. So Steve Rothstein's been working with the county attorneys on that.
Okay, thank you for that. And Anna, that 30-year recertification is a real big deal. Sounds like the county is heading towards that path. Is there any action we need to take to get ready, or are we going to be good?
We've been taking action and preparing for this already, so I appreciate that. But yeah, no.
And on the communication you mentioned with the county about the Safe Structures Board, sounds like that's in progress. I'm assuming that is happening, and you don't need anything from us at this point.
Not at this point.
So, colleagues, I'm satisfied with the update. I'm prepared to close the item. I'll yield to my colleagues if anyone, I think Commissioner Fernandez may want to weigh in here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may. I just want to, and also just so that Anna can state it on the record as part of the building maintenance logs. One of the things that took place was a grand jury by the state attorney on the collapse of the building and serve site. And as a result of it, there was the grand jury report and their findings that made many recommendations. Speaking with Anna, one of the things that was obvious was that the different building officials felt that individual municipalities shouldn't have regulations that were different and could create confusion, and that it was better to let the county do something uniform. However, in the meantime, as part of the building maintenance logs, and I believe you're incorporating into that the different recommendations of the grand jury, so that as people are completing their annual maintenance log, they're being informed and educated. So, like, if there was a recommendation on roof, they're being told the grand jury recommended that, you know, condo associations take these actions on their roof or on structural issues or some other type of issues. That's being incorporated, correct?
That is being incorporated, so that all the grand jury recommendations are being incorporated as use in a training, and also it will gather all the data in one place. And I've been speaking with some of the engineers that do the 40-year recertification, and they're excited about this idea because it'll make it easier for them to see if a building or where a building has had issues that have been recurring issues, so that they can follow up and concentrate on those areas and look for deficiencies in those areas.
But at some point, I think as a local government, if the county does not take action in adopting some of these, you know, life safety recommendations passed by the grand or recommended by the grand jury, I think there's going to have to be a time that the local governments, you know, should start considering this. Of course, we have to be respectful to the county and give them time to go through their process. But if they don't start adopting some of these recommendations, at some point maybe
through
we should
start looking.
Through the
log, we're adopting all of them. So through the log, we are adopting all of their recommendations.
We're informing people about the recommendations.
We are yes.
But we're not adopting them as policy.
Right. Well, we cannot, because we cannot unless we codify them as policy. And if we start making a requirement that everyone must re-roof at a certain time, I think that's there will be a huge backlash. I think you can recommend things, but especially as new products are are come out on the market, to force someone to do something on a timeline may not be the best recommendation for the future. So to codify something that may end up, because the industry designs something and comes up with something, you may end up having to then undo it, and you can't undo it necessarily at the same rate that industry comes up with new materials. So you may end up kind of painting yourself into a bad corner if we try to codify all of those and make those all requirements. I think going with a recommendation is a very strong and positive thing, and the fact that we are going to include that teaching component in everything, because at the state level, none of this is passing right now. And so the fact that at a local level we are taking action, I think will put us in a very good place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Number nine.
Mr. Chairman, I see one hand up. I don't know if it's on this item, but it's Marilyn.
Okay, Marilyn, are you calling in for this item? Marilyn, are you calling in for item number
seven? I don't know what's wrong with the group these days. It keeps saying my hand is up.
Sorry, Marilyn, we're having trouble hearing you.
I think she didn't mean to be.
Sorry, Marilyn.
I said that something is wrong with the Zoom system. The same thing happened yesterday.
Yeah, we're hearing the echo here too. PJ, would you see if you can troubleshoot that?
Issues on the user's end, it's not on our end. So, Marilyn, if you can turn off one of your devices, that will settle the issue that we're experiencing right now. So it seems like we have two devices logged in for you.
Marilyn, it sounds like you have two devices logged in possibly, and that might be creating the echo. If you can maybe turn one of them off.
Thank you. What I'm trying to say is yesterday the same thing happened. It kept showing that my hand was up and my hand was not up. So I apologize. I don't need to chime in this item. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thanks, Marilyn.
No, there's no one else on Zoom.
Okay. Commissioner Samuel, number nine is yours.
Yep, I'll tee this up. We know we've had some issues in related to short-term rentals, South of Fifth, apartment hotels. We have taken a number of actions. This body has moved forward with incentives to try and use an approach to get others to maybe consider alternative uses. We have had some increased enforcement in this area, and that's dovetailed in the memo. We know we have a traffic calming study that is going on. That's a very important effort. With that said, I believe there are two outstanding items in front of us. One is a potential overlay, the 4th Street overlay. I'm going to let Tom describe it, include some different elements, including uses. And second is the increase of fines and penalties for people breaking the rules. And in both elements, I am supportive of the direction, but I think it would be important for Tom just to give the headlines on those two components.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the memo, we've identified two additional areas that we think would be worthy of consideration, and we would recommend that the committee send both to the commission. The first would be to create a 4th Street overlay, and this would apply to those properties that are zoned CPS2 and located on the north side of 4th Street. The intent is not to limit what is already permitted, but to create a more appropriate transition zone from the RPS1 and RPS2 districts that are on the south side of 4th Street. And in order to do this, we've made some suggestions in terms of how the overlay could be developed. These include limiting the maximum building height to 50 feet, which is already the maximum height within that area, but there are certain types of uses where you could go to 75 feet. What we're suggesting is for at least the first two lots on the north side of 4th Street, that there be a hard cap of 50 feet. This would still allow for the appropriate distribution of the maximum allowable FAR in the CPS2 district. The other thing that we've suggested is providing some reasonable alcoholic beverage and use restrictions. And these would include things like making sure that outdoor ambient music is located more than 100 feet from the north side of 4th Street, that access points to transient uses as well as food and beverage establishments serving alcohol be limited to side streets and not permitted on 4th Street, and that there be a minimum setback from the north side of 4th Street. We've also suggested adding nuisance uses in a list of prohibited uses for the CPS 2 district. These would include uses such as smoke and vape stores, package stores, and the retail sale of alcohol for off-premise consumption. So we think what these will do is they will create an appropriate transition zone between the more intense CPS 2 district on the north side of 4th Street and the less intense RPS 1 and 2 districts on the south side of 4th Street. If there is consensus for this, we can bring a C4 referral to the planning board or to the city commission for referral to the planning board. With regard to the proposed fines, we have come up with some potential increases in fines that would be applicable to violations of the city's rules on short-term rentals and apartment hotels in the area. We are somewhat limited by state statute. However, we do think we could work with the city attorney's office and the code compliance department to come up with some increases that would still comply with state law. And if there's support for that, we can actually bring back a first reading ordinance to the full commission.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, so Tom, the action that the administration is recommending is twofold. One, refer the 4th Street overlay to the planning board, and two, to bring to the full commission potential increases in fines and penalties. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, colleagues, I welcome your feedback, but I'm prepared to move those two items.
So would we do the fines and penalties portion after it's gone to the planning board, or?
The fines and penalties would be separate because that would be a city code amendment. And so what we would probably do is bring a draft ordinance for you to discuss and consider. We would need to work closely with code compliance in the city attorney's office to make sure that, one, it would be effective, and, number two, that it comports with state law.
So I'm generally supportive of both. I'd like to do them together when it gets to the commission. So if we could get the one to the planning board and then at the same time concurrent working with legal and then bring both of the items to the commission at the same time so we can do those together.
Sure.
I would be supportive of that. So if is that okay?
No objection.
Okay. Chair?
Yeah.
Is that all right?
I'm okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good job.
So we'll show by acclamation to conclude the item with those two recommendations, bringing them to the commission. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Commissioner Fernandez had to leave, and so he had two items here, items 14 and 17. So those he asked to be deferred.
14 and 17?
Okay. 14 and 17. And I'm going to ask my own item number 18, to also be deferred because I'd like to tie that into that CPU discussion. Cause
okay.
I think they're
timely. We'll defer that to 513 as well, correct?
Okay. That leaves item 13.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I will, I think, is that our last item, Tom?
Let's see, item number. Yep.
By my calculation, yes.
I think so.
Yes.
Now we're in 39 minutes in here, so this is going to be
a record.
It could be record setting.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get busy on finance now, right? No, so you guys are going to challenge me even more.
Yeah, Commissioner Richardson, the bar is moving forward, and I can only, play this out so long. So let's talk about census findings. This really is just a discussion item. It was brought to my attention some data that suggested we may be experiencing some declines in our population. As we all know, Florida's been booming. People come here all the time, and a lot of cities have had growth. So I thought it was important to, one, see the facts, and two, just discuss what might be behind it, and three, what potential implications for it. So it is not an action item today. It's more a discussion given the macro data. And I think the city administration has done a fine job. And Tom, I don't know if that's you, but I'm looking forward to hearing from the city on this one.
Okay. So we put together some data regarding census, regarding population. And Let me just find the item. This is item number 13, correct? Yes. So this was based upon census data provided since 1990, and what we've seen is a fluctuation in residential population. There's going to be data that's available soon that's more block-based, but it appears that some of the residential fluctuation may have been due to some factors such as more transient uses. Other factors may have been properties being renovated with larger units. So that's the data that we had provided. This is for your discussion. If there's any questions on it or anything that you'd like to discuss on it, we're here to answer any questions.
Thank you for that, Tom. And again, you all did a great job just sort of summarizing. There have been fluctuations, but if I look at the key milestone years, it appears like we are experiencing real declines. I see 92,000 in 90, 88 in 2000, 88 in 2010 flat, and now down to 83. And in the spirit of a market that is largely growing, that does raise questions. So, Tom, could you expand on the potential wise? You said transient uses, maybe larger units. What else might be behind this?
Yeah, you've got a couple of different factors happening. You've got over the decades, certainly, we've seen a transition from single unit apartments to hotels. I remember when I started with the city in the early 1990s, you were seeing a lot of emphasis placed on incentivizing more hotel uses because there were a lot of smaller apartment units. During the 80s, the city had a real problem with illegal conversions of hotel units to residential units. A lot of those have converted back to apartment units, and you've seen larger apartment units being built and being occupied. You've also seen over the years older buildings being replaced with newer buildings that have less units, bigger units, but less units. And so all those factors tend to contribute to this. And then the other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of the residents on Miami Beach, well, not a lot, but some, they have houses other parts of the country, other parts of the world. They'll live here part-time. Some will count themselves as a full-time resident. Other times, they won't count themselves as a full-time resident, even though they spend a lot of time here.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm going to yield to my colleagues. But we talk about, in round numbers, 22,000-ish hotel rooms. Is that still a good estimate?
Yeah, it's around 20,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually saw some data. The Crane Watcher service is coming to Miami Beach because we've got a fair amount of activity. That's a new development. They're now watching. I think I saw, don't quote me, it's from memory, but I think I saw another 500 hotel rooms are at some stage. I guess it's interesting data. For me, if I had one sort of takeaway, I wonder about the additions we've had in transient uses, particularly hotels. They play an important role in tourism economic development, but it sounds like that's been growing pretty fast. And I think that's something we have to be mindful of. I'm not recommending any action today. I know one of my colleagues has an item, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, where we're assessing that. But that would be the one thing I'd want to look for. We could also have a discussion about, do we have the right housing stock? Are we making it easy enough for people to live here? But with that, I'll yield to my colleagues for any questions or comments.
So thank you for bringing this up. I think very interesting observations, right? In thinking about it, you know, we do have a declining population. We're definitely below where we were, say, in 1980. You know, and we do hear scuttlebutt all the time about, you know, more traffic and overdevelopment. And I'm like, okay, well, if we have overdevelopment, why is it we have fewer people? And we can speculate why that is. It's not like we've had a population boom. On the contrary, we have fewer folks here. Maybe they're being replaced by tourists. What what in thinking about it, what I'd like to do, if you guys agree, is maybe direct our economic development department at least once a year bring forward a report card that measures certain components, because population is just one data point. And the ones I was writing down were, you know, certainly population, change in population, hotel rooms, population, new permits for housing units created. I guess a net number, because you should also include the ones that were taken offline. Same for hotels. You know, I'd like to know what's going on at the schools, because that's a barometer of population movements. You know, we haven't added any schools, so that tells you not a lot more families are moving here. But get a census from schools, public and private, you know, student enrollment, convention center bookings, retail and office vacancies, hotel room rates. I think we had a report card that we look at once a year. The totality, we can see what's happening in population. More people moving here? Are there more apartment and housing starts? What does the office market look like? What does retail look like? Convention center bookings. Because we do get a sense that the city's very busy and active. Traffic is real, but where is it coming from? And I think we had a real report card that looked at all these and other metrics. I think we get a better flavor for what's happening in our city.
May I? I think that's an excellent suggestion. I very much appreciate support. The entire list is described. I would add to it what Tom described, that there may be some block-related data coming, so when that's available, we like it. I think where it fits, colleagues, is part of our planning process, right? When we think about our situation assessment, our goals, before we go to budget, that's the big strategic picture that then should drive budget. So I think that's right, and I look forward to hearing from Commissioner Richardson as well. But I think that's something we could request for the administration. I guess we're going to be really talking about the next cycle, so there's plenty of time here. But as we get ready for planning and goals for 2023, I think that scorecard, as you described, would be very helpful.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, we can add to it. But it may be a blueprint of what that report card will look like. It doesn't have to have the data yet. We'll populate that later. But I do think, and I thank you for bringing this up, I do think if we start thinking like that as a city for planning purposes, it'll be useful. You know, we get this data in different components. We know what average room rates are and occupancy and all of that. But if in one report card, all of this data, it tells a full picture of what's happening.
Agreed. Is that something that you'd want us to update via LTC? Is that something you'd want us to bring back to you here? Or
I think if we get in the discipline of having that all together, and my guess is put it in economic development's responsibility, and then we can use that once a year going into the budget cycle, put it out as an LTC. But
if I could build on that, maybe with no rush at all, take a couple months to have a blank scorecard, just basically building on what we said, and then the intent to fill it in for the first time when we get ready for the next budget cycle for our early 23 goals. To me, at least we'd have a view of what it's going to be. It's the data. I think the right time to do that is planning. That would be my leaning.
I don't want to overcomplicate it, but those are all economic. Probably throw some parking data in there too, at least in the public garages. I know we measure things like environment, right? So a little section for environment, air quality, water quality, because I think we get report cards on that as well, Tom. Sort of, I don't want to overdo it and throw so much at it, but you know, economic, hey, the city's doing great or it's slowing down. I just threw an environmental easy metric, you know, what's the quality of our natural resources.
So the other thing, I don't know if you guys saw yet, we just got an email this morning about resort taxes. Great news. I mean, another banner month, 12 million just last month and 3 million over our budget. So I'm already thinking about how we can put that to good use in the city. So as part of the scorecard, you know, I'm always curious about the resort taxes, and I've never asked John this question, and I'm not asking him if he's watching to come down here now. So, but as part of the scorecard, it would be interesting to see, you know, how many rooms we have. It's around 20 or 22,000. But is this increase, is the resort taxes coming from, it could be higher occupancy on the rooms we have. So it could be higher rates. The hotel rates we know are really high. So that could be also useful as part of the scorecard. You know, we could be looking at, you know, is occupant, if we have 20,000, if occupancy obviously is higher, then resort taxes are going up. If room rates are higher, resort tax. So maybe we can use that resort tax data to look at the number of people visiting us and so forth. So and the other thing that could be happening is if the number is growing because new hotels or apartment hotels are being built, and then of course what we can't count are the hundreds of illegal Airbnbs that are sadly operating in our city. So thanks.
Great discussion, colleagues. Appreciate it. Agree with all those comments. Tom, do you have enough direction to move forward here?
Yeah, I think Eric and I will meet with the Director of Economic Development, and I think what the direction is it would be to develop this blank scorecard, bring it to the Commission, and then update it on a yearly basis and send those updates out via LTC.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't know if my colleagues have a strong feeling, but maybe we would see it here at committee because we have time, so as opposed to directly to the commission.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind having to come here. We've had a fulsome discussion. We can say this is what we want, then go to the full commission.
You want to go ahead and continue this to the September meeting so we can develop that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll continue this to the September 13th, LUSC, and we'll bring you back the scorecard before we show it to the commission. Okay.
Wonderful. Less than 2 hours. Commissioner Richardson.